Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of your favorite podcast, Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
Welcome once again to the brilliant podcast that is Insane in the Membrane with me, Rich Wilson. Now, producer Paul pressing the buttons. He never gets a shout out, that man. And this wouldn't be in your ears if it wasn't for him. So thank you, producer Paul, for all that you do. He works tirelessly. He's a good man. Before we get into it, become a patron. Please become a patron. Support this podcast. Even if it's just a quid a month. That's a quid a month from all of you would be lovely. That's it. Just to, and all the money goes back into the podcast. It's not like we're rolling around in helicopters and Ferraris and all that. We just want to keep giving you one of the finest podcasts going. And so if you go to our Patreon page, it's patreon.com/membrane podcast. Or click the link tree in all of our in my bios, in my Instagram, I am Rich Wilson, in Twitter, I am Rich Wilson. Do that, give us a click, send us a quid, and that would be lovely, or whatever you can afford. And it just helps us keep this going. Thank you to all of our patrons we have on board already. Your hard work does not go unnoticed. We really appreciate all that you do. Thank you so much. And it's really nice to talk to some of you as well. So if you feel like having a message, drop me a line. I'll have a chat with you. Yeah, do that, because I have a chat with a few people and it's all bloody lovely. People like Mags Doodles and all that. Hope your foot's all right. Hope that's out of the cast. I saw you've hurt yourself. If it's not, then I'm sorry. Get well soon. But yeah, you'll be up and dancing soon enough, I imagine. Anyway, so we're back on the podcast. It's been a funny old few weeks with the old Queenie passing on, and the funeral and the queue that went on for 52,000 miles. Crazy. We love a queue in this country. But my guest this week on Insane in the Membrane is someone that I remember watching on TV in the 90s. We talk about this on the episode, actually. So I won't go over what I already said, but it was just a joy to have him on. He's one of my favourite comedians. I love watching him work. He's like properly funny. There's no kind of like trying to teach you things or, you know, be too political and things like that. It's just properly funny, straight comedy. I love him dearly, and it was a real joy to have him on. And we really talked about some really good things, like about growing up. Because we're both similar age. I'm 50 and he's 53, I think he says in the episode. So it was good to talk to someone of that similar upbringing, you know, where we've done good and bad things, you know. That's the thing as well, doing these podcasts, you realise that we're all of us, this gets said on here quite a bit, I know, but we're all, you know, sometimes we do shitty things, sometimes we do good things, but sometimes the shitty thing is because it's a reaction to something else, and you know, we're all just trying to find our way, aren't we? All under a lot of pressure at the minute, what with the, you know, the cost of living crisis and all manner of other stuff. So it blows my mind that we're not all fighting in the streets in our underpants, just kicking off proper Lord of the Flies style-y, you know. We're all doing a very good job keeping it together. So, like, little pat on the back to all of you. We haven't thrown the telly through the window yet. We're all keeping it together and trying to make sure we do our bit to look after our loved ones and our friends and everyone around us and, you know, people we see around and about the place. So I think credit where it's due, everybody. Well done. Well done for keeping it together. So this podcast, this episode, again, was with just a smashing dude, Paul Tonkinson. So let's get on with it again, shall we? Let's get on with it. Let's have a listen to Paul. So coming up in a minute is Paul Tonkinson.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A podcast from producerpaul.co.uk.
Insane in the Membrane.
Good to see you, Paul. You good?
I'm good, mate. Yeah, good to see you.
Yeah, and you, mate. Good to see you. Thank you for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Right, no worries, mate. It's good fun. Why is it so funny to see you with your headphones on like that in a booth? I don't know why.
I think it's because I was like that.
How many have you done today?
This is the second one. So
okay. Oh, it's not
nice.
Too bad.
Yeah, not too bad. It's nice. It's nice talking to good people, though. So
good,
I enjoy
good.
It. Yeah, it's yeah. Nice. There's no big introduction. We just have a chat. We just
yeah, that's cool. That's fine. Cool. Yeah, that's
cool. Nice one, man. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to start with this. It's still, I say this to you every time I see you, I think, that it's still, I still find it surreal. Having watched you on the TV throughout the 90s and things like that, to then, like chatting to you now and being at gigs with you and having spent time with you, I still go, fucking Tonks, man. It's like,
imagine how hard it is for me, how far I've fallen. Imagine if only I could have predicted then that was a very peak of my endeavors. Do you know what, when I think about those times, and I was lucky enough to do a fair bit of telly in the late 90s and early 2000s. It feels like another life now. It's really weird. I really enjoyed it. I found it quite stressful and really intense. And now I just, it feels like a sort of, I don't know, it really is like a sort of before and after thing.
Yeah.
I did quite a lot in the late 90s, a Sunday show and MTV and whatever, and, you know, various quiz shows, and ended up on The Big Breakfast. But it sort of, it just feels like another bloke because I've changed so much.
Yeah.
And my life's changed so much. And I'm so much happier now. that's reality. I loved doing telly. It was great. I found it very stressful. It's very stressful being on television a lot. And it sort of, and I just had, it came at a time in my life and I just had a couple of, my kids were really young. So it was things like, you know, you'd have two kids with chicken pox and the car would come to you at 4 a.m. to take you into, to do The Big Breakfast. And then you get in at 1 p.m. and you couldn't really go and see him because you didn't want to get chicken pox. Do you know what I mean? It was
that sort of
it was a sort of collision of like new dadhood and new things that I really wanted to make work. So it was sort of it was a bit of a battle, really. But you know, things like the Sunday Show, MTV was, I did MTV every day for a year. I really enjoyed that. That was just really cool. You know, you just had lots of freedom to go in and do whatever you wanted. And I've been on the circuit. It's funny because I did a podcast a few days ago with Jason Manford, who's done a thing about comics who've been on the circuit for like over 25 years, which is a nice little idea. And it just makes you realise how long you've been fucking having rounds. You know, I've been full time since 1993. So I'm approaching nearly 30 years as a full time. And I did my first gigs in about 1988. I mean, they barely had television then. You know, I've been around a long time. I still enjoy it, you know, what can I say?
Well, it's one of those things. Whenever I used to watch the TV in the 90s, it was if you or Gary Crowley were on it, you kind of went, oh yeah, this is going to be all right. I'll watch this.
Oh, nice. That's very nice. That's very kind to say. Thank you. Thank
it was you. Like that. You were in that kind of, you were in that realm to me. You know, you, it was all, you know, it was worth watching.
I'll take that. That's very kind. Yeah, I'll take that. There was a time when I was considered slightly cool. I tell that to my kids now. They just don't believe me. They're just like, what?
But you'll never be cool to your own kids. Like my boys, they're getting it a bit now. Now they're 30 and 25, so they're kind of
cool.
So they're kind of getting it. But they're still, you're never going to be cool. You're never going to be, you know.
My kids are a bit younger than yours. They're sort of 23, 22, and 19. And my 19-year-old came to see me do a set at the Comedy Store. And that felt, they've all come to see me at the store, but it felt, because he's a bit sort of like, he's a bit sort of not gangster, but he's a bit like, he's a bit sort of, he's into hip hop and he's a B-boy culture. And do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Smokes a lot of weed. It's very much a world into itself. Do you know what I mean? Like YouTube channels and loads of stuff that I don't really understand. But it was undoubtedly cool to get him and his mates in free to the Comedy Store. And then I did a little routine. I did a little routine basically about him and his mates. And then afterwards, just on when I was on stage, I said, and he's here tonight. And I gestured to him and everyone looked at him and cheered him. And I mean, that's cool, isn't it? Do you know what I mean?
That is cool. Yeah.
Cool. As long as you have a good gig, it was like, what you don't want is your kids seeing you die on your ass. That's not good. I took my son to... when my eldest was about early 20s, he was about 19. I was supporting McIntyre on his arena tour, and they came to see me at the O2. And don't worry, I had a good gig, it was fine. But before the gig, he was watching everyone come in, and it was like 15,000 people, whatever. And he just started having a panic attack. He just felt the pressure so much. The idea of dying in front of your kids is horrendous, isn't it? You know what I mean? Even for him, the thought of me dying was so horrendous. It was all he could do to stay. He was just literally having a panic attack. I was like, my wife was texting me saying, George is freaking out. I was like, tell him not to worry. It's going to be okay, you know. But for your kids, it must be very hard to see your dad out there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
have your
kids
ever seen you?
Yes, yeah. There was a time.
Yeah, it's a fun.
Yeah, my eldest, when he was learning to, he was at dance school in Enfield, and then all of his mates just arrived at this gig I was doing in Stratford. Like it was about 15 of them, and they all piled in. I think it was Quincy's gig. They all piled in, and they're all stood along the bar, and they're very kind of there. Like they were all sort of youth back then.
Well, that's like my lad, because he studies dance and he's studying street dance.
Same.
Stratford. Yeah, so yeah, it's a similar thing.
Yeah, so it was all that. So they all came in, and then every time I said anything, they were like, "Whoa!" They're all spinning around and like slapping the floor and like, cool. "No!" Like massive.
Cool. Yeah, and that's cool, isn't it? That's
cool. So I think, I'll go back on what I said. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, they're seeing their dad at work controlling rooms in front of loads of people who think he's really funny. I mean, that can only help. Do you know?
Yeah.
That can only help.
Did you find it difficult? I know I did, because I had my kids at the beginning of the 90s, and the 90s is now, people talk about it in a way like people talk about the 60s, you know, that kind of hedonism was at an all-time high. Like we had the late 80s, that's when it sort of kicked in. Did you find it difficult to balance that? Because we all got involved, but did you find it very difficult to balance that with being a parent as well? Because I know I did.
Hedonism and going out and stuff?
Yeah.
No, all I can say is that there was a bit of crossover. Do you know? There's a crossover of hedonistic impulses. Do you know what I mean? There was a bit of like, I wasn't quite ready. I sort of had kids as a way to sort of, as an accelerant to growing up kind of thing.
Right.
You know what I mean? I've sort of got married, had kids, almost as like that. I knew it was the right thing to do. And I knew that in the process of doing it, I would grow up. And so I think you stop. You're like going out, going clubbing. There was a little bit of that. There's a little bit of sometimes when you've been out all night, sort of raving and stuff, and then you've got to look after a kid in the morning, a baby or whatever. Those things get so incongruous. You just stop going out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You stop doing those things. That's what it was like. But there was definitely a bit of crossover. And there's also a bit of that. There's a bit of that now. I mean, I go to the parties. I'm 53. and we're all like ravers.
Yeah.
And I don't do drugs like that anymore. I just don't. But some of my mates do, and that it's still like this. Yeah. We find it so hard to let it go. I think generationally, with the generation who like, we find it very hard to let it go. Let the day go. We're like, yeah, back in the day. It's almost like we leave them no area to rebel in. It's like, call this a rave. Back in the day, we used to fucking call these drugs. We used to do proper drugs. Proper drugs, you know? It's like, we don't leave them anything. I remember this tune when it first came round.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we all start to trample on their vibe. It's like, I think we need to just... Just go to the sidelines a bit more gracefully sometimes and let them take over. Do you know what I mean?
Don't
worry, they are claiming it. They're going out all the time and having a great laugh. But do you know what I'm saying about our generation? It's like this back in the day, you know?
Yeah. It's and when like, you think back to it, you go, when you really think of it, you go, a lot of the time you just stood in some murky, damp,
old
shit.
Yeah, come get home and you're there like, shit.
I stood around at Trafalgar Square waiting for the night bus, so it was just freezing cold.
How sort of timid you used to get when you were coming down. It's sort of like how sort of like it's vulnerable generally, you know.
But my turning point was when I had a load of mates back to my flat, and me and their mum had broken up. And I had my own flat, and a load of mates came back to my flat, and we were getting on it. And then I looked across, and one of my mates was doing a line off of one of the boys' PlayStation games. And I went, no, that's the one.
It's the collision. It's the collision.
Yeah.
It's sort of boundaries, because now we go to cross generational parties, and we have a house party. All the kids' mates come, and we all come as well. And there's drugs flying around everywhere. You know, the old ones seem to be doing loads of like edibles and sort of more gentle sort of things. But the youngsters are, you know, what I'm saying is, I'm not going to do Charlie with my kids or their mates. Do you know what I mean? I've got no interest. But some people do. Some of my mates do, but I'm not. There's boundaries. I'm not gonna do that. Do you know what I mean? There's things I don't do. I don't want to get stoned with them, really, to be honest. It's just, I'm just not gonna do that. But at the same time, they're gonna know, you know, I might have had an edible a couple of hours ago and I'm a bit giggly. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I'll do that with them, but I don't want to do the hard stuff. Do you know what I mean? I don't think kids want to see their parents really off their tits.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
I remember seeing when you were a kid, you see your mum and dad, they'd had a few. Yeah, and always felt a bit weird. It was always, your mum, I remember we were at a house party of friends of the family and things, and mum and dad came in from the garden with mud on their knees where they'd been just pissed in the garden. And they just came in and I'm like, oh, this is just weird. It's just weird.
Yeah, so you don't want to see that.
No, I don't imagine racking up a few lines with the boys. It'd be fucking awful. Just on a moral level, on an ethical level, I feel.
Just everything. Yeah. You've got to maintain some level of dignity. Do you know what I mean? You know, because I've always been very honest with my kids about drugs, because it would have felt hypocritical not to. Do you know? Yeah, and I think that's helped our relationship. I always said, listen, I did it. These are good things. About it. These are the down things. Good luck to you. Try not to do too much. Whatever, you know. Try to. And I think, but I know some parents of sort of North London, quite successful people. That sort of boundarylessness. There's no boundaries. It's like, I'll get my kids a bit of weed, or whatever. Do you know what I mean? That sort. I don't know whether that's a working class thing or a northern thing. I just don't want my kids to see me like that. Do you know what I mean? I don't want my kids to see me from my tits. You know.
I did it by accident once. There was a friend of mine. There was
real confessions time, isn't it?
Yeah. That's right. We ended up in Soho to have a drink in this pub, and then my son messaged to say, are you around, Dad? I think it was his birthday or something like that. And I went, actually, I'm at the Blue Post in Soho. If you want to come across, come and have a drink with us. So we have a few drinks, and then his mate said, my mate I was with said, oh, there's a lock-in at the pub round the corner, round the back of Carnaby Street. Right, we'll go around there then. So we all piled around there, and my eldest is having a great time. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm out having a great time, you know, pissed with Dad. We end up at this lock-in, and then my mate all night long is going, do you want a bit of that? I'm like, no, mate, no, I'm with the boy. I don't want to do that. Anyway, a few drinks in, and then later on he goes, do you want a bit of that? And I went, oh, yeah, all right. Like, I'll have one just to keep me going, but like, just don't tell him. So I go across, and I'm on this table, and I do a bit. And as I stand up, this guy stands up next to me, and it's my son.
Right.
We both stood up. So secretly, we'd gone off and gone, right, don't tell dad, right, don't tell him.
Yeah.
And we both looked at him and went, it was the most horrendous moment. And we laugh about it now, but even now, we're like, that's my lowest point.
It's a kind of dready, cringy, it's like they've seen you fall, haven't they?
Yeah.
There's a sense of fall of it. It's not something you're proud of, is it? It's something you succumb to. Do you know what I mean? It's something you, at our age, do you know what I mean? It's something you surrender to. My kids, like, they call it the packet, don't they? We're getting into packet. Everyone's got some packet. And it's like, that's, I know they're going to do it, but, and I can't judge them because of what I did, but I just don't want them to, I am father. Do you know?
It's like
my lad today, my youngest, he's a dancer, and he's starting to get a bit of work, which is great.
Mm.
And he was working late last night, and this morning, like, I made him some breakfast, and he had a day's filming to go to. And then when he went, oh, see you later, mate. And I nearly texted him, and I'm definitely going to have a word with him, because it's like, I don't want him to call me mate. And I was trying to show affection, and that's great. And I love him to death, of course. And I don't even want him to, he doesn't have to say, see you later, pops, or whatever. But just don't call me mate, do you know? whatever it is, don't call me mate. So that's a conversation we will have later, which he won't understand, do you know what I mean?
No, I know, because it's funny, because I've referred to my sons as mate. All right, mate.
Right, yeah.
So I guess, but to get it back would be weird.
It's sort of, you want them to be able to confide in you. But I don't want to sound too traditional, but there has to be some sort of leadership, slight separation going on. Do you know what I mean? Maybe to be serious a minute, it's with me and my youngest, because with me and him, it's like I found it hard to find that separation with him. Because the eldest, it came naturally. My daughter, it came naturally. But my youngest, I feel so close to him. It's almost like, I find it hard to get a boundary with my kids. I feel so close to it. I feel so, if he wins, if he gets a gig, I feel so proud. If there's a problem, I feel so enmeshed in it. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of, it's quite hard to find that boundary, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe it's as much for me as for him. Do you know? Obviously, I'm in there with him in his life, but for me to retain some rationality over it, so I can give decent advice or some sort of, to be solid, do you know what I mean? It's to give that solidity, you know? Yeah, that's it. Because if there's something going on previously, I have struggled with it. If he's been down, I've been really down with him. And you don't really need that, do you, from your dad? You need him to give you a sense of solid perspective and the chance of a lift, as opposed to someone who's in there with you feeling really... you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. Well, my lad, because my youngest is studying music at BIM. Right. And he gets his student loan, and then he just spunks it. And then you're going, you've got to just, I know this is really difficult, but you've just got to pace yourself when you get it. He goes, I know, Dad, I know. And then he goes, but I'm just like you, aren't I, when it comes to money? And I went, fuck, yeah. And I didn't know what to say.
we've got the problem at the moment of my son is, and my daughter have got our, they're on our account for like Uber.
Right.
Uber Eats. So we're constantly, they're like the digital aristocracy. We're constantly saying, don't get, and then it's like, it comes in after weekend, this list of like Uber Eats and Uber. You know, I mean, it's like another aristocracy, isn't it? It's like, just like wherever you want to go. It's like, but I've said to my wife, get them off the account. Get them off the account. Do you know what I mean?
Well, you know, it's like, you know, with all the best will in the world, you like, if your dad had given you a credit card and gone, right.
Of course, you're away. Do you know what I mean? But I mean, for my daughter, if she's out in town, I prefer her to get an Uber then. Do you know what I mean? You want to protect them. But just don't abuse it. Do you know what I mean? This is like 6 p.m. Uber. What are you doing to get six? This is early in the morning. Emergencies only. You know what I mean? This is what I say. It's an ongoing battle.
I had it with my sons. They were really good actually. I had my iTunes account and before Spotify and everything. And then I was like, right, here's the iTunes. You can have what you want, but you know, don't take the piss. And they were really good. Like they'd message you, go, Dad, can I have a song? Dad, can I have an album? And I was
that's nice.
So they they're really good lads. They've almost gone, right, I don't actually want to be like Dad. I want to be the opposite.
That's so inspiring.
I don't want to be that. I want to be this. It was
it's going to be really interesting. And your kids are a bit further along than mine, how this generation reacts to our generation of parenting. Because I think my generation reacted to, to varying or lesser degrees, a bit of a harsher parental model of like seen but not heard. You do what you're told. I don't think my parents' generation were having chats about what good parents they were or how to be a better parent.
No.
Do you know what I mean? But we've been a bit more conscious about that as a generation, haven't we? And the messages we're giving to our kids. And ultimately, a lot more indulgent as well. You know, we listen to them with less judgment around drugs, behaviour, etc. Yeah. And I wonder, it's a bit of a social experiment, isn't it? It's going to be interesting to see how they respond. Do they go more traditional again? Or I think they seem socially very conscious, very like, you know, they're very cool around sort of racism and gender stuff, really progressive in ways that are fantastic. But, the sex thing seems a bit weird whenever you talk to them about it, because I've had so much porn and all that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel a bit of a... I feel like my generation's failed a bit to police that. It was almost impossible to do so, to stop that torrent, that tsunami of porn. What can we do? Do you know what I mean? Stop it.
Well, I think that came from the fact that we didn't have it growing up. And so it was it was always someone had stolen a video off one of their dads or someone had found something, or the magazines famously that we used to find. And so whenever we found anything like that, it was always like, oh, it was this thing. Exactly. And we knew the struggle that we'd gone to get that little bit. And I think, so once porn became openly available, there was a moment at the beginning, we were kind of like, you haven't got to find mucky books in the bushes. But I know what you mean. Now it's just, you're two clicks away from utter filth. And you're like, hold on a minute.
And we didn't think about the effects of. No. I mean, I do think both boys, girls, young men, young women are both suffering from that expectation. Do you know what I mean? From what that generates. You know, I think that and social media just generally have compounded to provide a unique set of challenges for them. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
It's if you think when we were back in the day. You had your mates, didn't you? You had a set of mates. You had like, you know, however big that was, you know, 6-8 mates or whatever. And you went out as a gang. You had a laugh. And that was your world then, wasn't it? That was what you related to. But now it's literally everyone in the world and Instagram and constant comparison. I mean, we struggle to do with it as adults. Imagine being like 15 and you're smoking this weird weed that affects your brain and you're watching loads of porn. I mean, it's a recipe for disaster.
There is. This is where, like you've just said, you start to think you sound like some old curmudgeon, but there is too much of everything now.
Yes,
everything is widely available all the time, 24/7. Whereas when we were kids, shops weren't even open on a Sunday. Sundays were the worst day because there was nothing to do.
But that's the thing. They don't get to experience boredom, do they? Sunday it was like. Nothing happened, nothing on telly. And it was shut for religious reasons, but half of the people in the country weren't even religious. You were just like, it was just a day of boredom. But there's something quite interesting about boredom, isn't it? Because then you think about stuff and you get comfy with yourself. You kind of, I mean, we didn't even play with mates really on a Sunday. We were sort of just around the house or in the garden, just not really doing much. And kids never experience boredom now, do they? So you never, and that's... You know, they're saturated with. I mean, I struggle with it myself. Social media. It's like I get up on a morning, and I normally just click into like Twitter, the news, whatever. And I'm getting better at it now. But there's been periods before where I've been having a row with someone before I've even got out of bed. I've been rowing with a stranger pre-breakfast, you know, who I'll never meet, you know.
Yeah. And just...
It's so combative and weird and so much content constantly, do you know what I mean?
To the point, I actually, because for the podcast and for various other things that we're doing, I was saying to producer Paul, who does this with me, I was like, it's now to a point I have to put aside a day to start doing social media and treat it like a job because there's so much to promote and so much to do.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Because it's just, you wake up and then you're like, oh, I better plug that. Oh, I better mention that. Yeah. And then someone else will go, oh, you don't tweet enough or you don't know. So tweet some, and you're like, it's just, I know this, again, this might make me sound like an old prick, but I keep fantasizing about living in a house in the woods with a dog and a truck.
Of course. But I mean, at least if you can use social media professionally, that's great and sort of justifiable. But I'm just, because I like to, I don't like to like play to like an echo chamber or feel like an echo chamber. So I accept all views and stuff. It's like you're ingesting chaos. Do you know? there's no rest in it. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, and that's a weird thing, I think, for you professionally, when you have been advised to push up on social media. We're being measured by metrics on mediums that we know aren't good for our mental health. So, do you know what I mean? Twitter, there's amazing things to it, but again, it's like something you surrender to, isn't it? You surrender to social media and then you do your little gerbil wheel of whatever it's, Twitter, Facebook, news, blah, 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 and then you throw it away an hour later and you've just been lost in the meantime. Yeah. And it's just it's a permanent agitation, isn't it?
Well, like you just said, it's definitely like you open your laptop and it's just shouting and hollering and fireworks going off and fighting. And it's like like the end of Bugsy Malone where they're all fighting. And then you shut your laptop again and it's like, whoa, fuck. And you look around your house and...
It's so hard to resist, though, isn't it? It's just there to scratch constantly. Do you know what I mean?
I've tried to read more. I'm trying to read more, but... I get a couple of paragraphs in and I'm like, I wonder what's happening
My rule with social media is I'll only use it when I'm conscious. When I'm asleep, I'll stay off it. I find that hard. I find that difficult. I try and read as well. I mean, it's that kind of, you know, if I'm writing on something, it's that sort of, it's that deep work, isn't it? And you can only do that when you're untethered. You've got to throw it away for a bit and really get into it.
Yeah.
And also that's why stand-up's great, isn't it, as well? Because when we're on stage, we're not on social media and other people aren't as well on the whole. And you're just involved in this pure connection that sort of helps you see the ridiculousness of things. There's something very, very healthy about being a comedian, isn't it? And experiencing that and giving it to others and just feeling that. Even though, of course, you come off stage and everyone's, you know, tweeting about it. but for that period on stage, it remains consistently pleasurable and surprisingly pleasurable. Even though I've been doing it for like 30 years, it's that the pleasure you get from it, the feeling of connection is incredible.
Oh, it's
a long time, you know.
Yeah, it's incredible. I've actually said this recently. I'm more at home on that stage doing the 20 minutes I'm doing or whatever or however long it is than I am the rest of the time, because I'm not worrying about bills, I'm not worrying about anything. I'm just worrying about making the people laugh at that moment. And it isn't even a need. I don't even need to do it. It's not like I'm like, oh yeah, look at me, all eyes on me. It's like you've literally just said, it's like I'm out of the chaos for 20 minutes and we've got to worry about
you're very comfortable on stage and it really shows. That feeling that you transmit. I mean, comedians are contexts, aren't they? It's like we're contexts within which things happen. Most of it's stuff that we generate, but also sometimes people shout, something's happened. So we're contexts for this time, and you do that very well. You're really easy watch. People do it differently, don't they? But you're very comfy, easy. Easy watch, and it relaxes the crowd to see you looking so.
Thanks, mate. So
that's great. But I always think that stand-up is, I see it as almost existing beyond time. I almost see it as like something that doesn't exist in the normal stratosphere of time, because a minute can feel like it lasts forever if it's going badly.
Yeah, oh,
and
God, yet yeah.
It can fly by if it's going really well. I just think it's almost like time added on to life. Do you know what I mean? It's just there's something about it that's so intense to experience as a comedian, and you're literally living second to second out there. There's something so beautiful about it. I did a couple of gigs last week. I was in Manchester. I've been up north doing loads of gigs for the week, which is something I rarely do because I really like being at home as I get older. I just love being at home, and I find it very draining to be away from home and sort of wasting time during the day.
Yeah.
I had two gigs on Sunday in Manchester, and they were real like sort of solid working class Manchester crowds. There was one at Hollins Social Club and then one in Prestwich. They're the kind of rooms that you don't get into when you're in London because it's a bit more middle classy or a bit younger or whatever. These are like people between like 50 and 70 really. And I just had great gigs, and the laughter, the unselfconscious laughter that sometimes you get from working class crowds who really just go for it off the bat. And there's something about me, even though I've lived up north for so long, lived down south for so long, when I go back up north, I just feel a bit more, just slightly comfy. Yeah. There's something a bit more about returning. and the pleasure that those gigs give you, it's really solid soul nutrition, isn't it? I mean, it really carries you for a few days, even now, and I've been doing it for 30 years. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's like 200 people in a room. But the laughs, and you get into the roles of the laughs, and it's just, it's just very, not many people get that at work, do they?
No,
just,
not really.
It's so unusual. You know, my mates, I know a lot of successful people who do very, very well, but they don't get that, you know.
No.
And it's hard to, you say you don't need it, but that's still very hard to give up, isn't it?
Oh, definitely, yeah, when you put it that way, yeah. It's funny when you get messages from people that, last week I did this gig in Milton Keynes, and it was one of those gigs where it was electric. Everyone it just built up this surge of energy, and we all just left just buzzing.
Lovely.
And we're walking out. We all walked out together, out through the car park, out to the, and we were just all just fizzing with excitement. Each and every one of us had a really good time. And there was a group of women, and they went, "Do you know what? We really needed that." And you're like, that's interesting. Again, they'd been taken out of there, whatever's going on with them for a moment.
Absolutely. It's that sort of thing of like, there's something, because basically I do club comedy. I've toured a little bit, but I prefer clubs. And part of that is because I get to chat with other comics. And that's one thing that I really learned during lockdown. I don't really hang around with comics too much when I'm not working. I've always had a big bunch of mates who've got nothing to do with stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
But I like most comics because there's a sense of there's a kinship, isn't there? We understand each other. You know what I mean? From the best to the worst, we understand what it is to be scared about going on stage or to feel threatened or to have a good gig or whatever. And there's an understanding of that. And during lockdown, you realised how singular a pursuit it is as well, because you were surrounded by people say, "What does it matter? Just do something else." Just do something else. And it's like, we really missed it. But I also really miss just hanging around in green rooms with comics. It's just a laugh, isn't it? It's just, you just get each other. And it's good to feel understood.
Yes.
Because during lockdown, we weren't really. And that's okay. No, we can't all understand each other. But this idea of like, "What, you want to just do something else?" It wasn't really like, people just don't understand it, did they? Make you realize how distinct it is a thing to do, you know. And also how unemployable you were in other areas. I thought, because I couldn't do Zoom gigs. It felt too bleak. If you had to do them, fine, and whatever. Some people found a way of making it work. But I couldn't even do Zoom socially. I just found it too sad. You know, we'd have like, we had some Zoom quizzes. It was like a really sad edition of Mock the Week with mates, wasn't it? And you all had to wait to speak. And all. It was just so, I just couldn't do it.
Nah,
I almost started crying, honestly. I just could not do it. So I thought, I'll just do something normal. I just want to contribute, you know. So I went to the local supermarket and I said, I just really want to work in the supermarket for a few months, and I'm giving my CV and stuff. And I realised pretty quickly, they don't want stand-up comics working at supermarkets because you'll just give the boss grief or they don't want. Do you know what I mean? And then I worked in the NHS in a hospital for a little bit. I did some volunteering delivering meds to like COVID wards because I wanted to be where it was all happening. Sort of thing. And it was really dramatic and I enjoyed it. And you put on all the gear and all that. But you realised how unsuitable you were for normal work because you'd be joking all the time. So it was about 10 days in and they said to me, how are you doing? I said, I'm really enjoying it. You know, I feel really comfy and I'm really looking forward to like maybe doing some operations. They looked at you like you were just insane for even joking about it. You know, because I worked in the meds thing. It was like I was there when all the vaccines were coming through and there's been vaccines everywhere. This is when no one could get all the vaccines. And I was saying to people, we can make some serious money. Why don't we? Do you know? I was just joking, but yeah. It made you realize how different you were because they were, it was serious business. And they looked at you. It wasn't that they didn't get it. They just thought you were just. Well, it's like you're an alien. Do you know what I mean? They just didn't get it at all. It was fascinating, wasn't it?
I was really lucky that I ended up working at my mate's t-shirt place. He had an online t-shirt shop. Very sort of tattoo print. SOS Clothing, good lads. And they went, look, we need someone to do the printing. You want to just come and do this? And so because I was with mates and we were all kind of sectioned off with each other. Yeah. It didn't feel like I was working. I was there. I was doing. It was good. I don't know how much money I cost them with all the fuck ups I made, but
it really made you envy people's jobs, didn't it? I was so envious of anyone with a job and just wanted to just contribute or just have something to do. Do you know what I mean? Just because it was so. Oh God, the great awfulness. But what a joy! What a joy! And it's weird this. Thing that's happened recently with the Queen dying and stuff, because before it happened, I felt that it just got back to just really back. Do you know what I mean? I was starting to get more gigs midweek, and I don't know. It just all felt really coming. It's really solidly back now. It's coming. You know, September's not a great time for it to happen to stand-ups, is it? For the gigs, a couple of gigs get cancelled. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's starting to feel really super healthy. I'm sure it'll spin back straight away. I'm sure it'll be fine. But it was, the circuit's very resilient. To return to your point about the women who needed it, I think the circuit's very resilient because people are constantly surprised by what a good time they have at a comedy gig because they might not know the act on the bill, but it's a very competitive hierarchy within stand-up comedy and everyone just wants to get laughs. It's not an indulgent atmosphere, which is what I really like as well. And it's just people laugh hard for 2 hours at a variety of different people with different perspectives.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, it's surviving and thriving, you know.
Because
it's a good moment, you know.
I think it's, and especially now with social media, because we're so much more aware of things. We always knew that, I've said this many times on air, my dad was a civil servant. I remember him turning around saying to me, he goes, look, the world is corrupt from the top down. So you're always aware that was happening. But now because everything's so out in the open, recently, they were talking about the royal family and one side of the fence is people going, but she did so much great. The royal family did this, they did that. Then you got the other side of people going, but they fucked everybody and they're fucking you over again. And it goes back to that constant chaos. And I think sometimes I miss sort of being aware of things but not having it in your face, like you knew you were getting fucked somewhere but you didn't know by who really.
Well, everyone's got to have a hot take, haven't they? And I'm right down the middle, so like with the royal family it's just like I see it as quite absurd and stuff but I quite like it as well. I just quite like it as an aspect of what makes our society a little bit peculiar. Not everything has to make sense, you know, because life doesn't always make sense. And to me, it's just they make the country a bit richer and more colourful. They're an example of something. I'm not going to queue, you know. I'm not going to be in the queue for 9 hours, but I'm not going to judge the people who are in the queue. And it's just, I think sometimes we lose our sense of just tolerance of difference on both sides, from the left and the right. Do you know what I mean? It's just like we've always got to. I just find I find myself just in the middle of a lot, thinking, you know, just give people a break a bit. Again, that's Twitter, isn't it? And it's sort of like extreme viewpoints get likes, get clicks, or whatever. So it rewards shouting and extremism, doesn't it? You know.
Yeah. So, I think, and people come on here, and I've had conversations with people, and they worry that this is going to be, this is a podcast that in order to get people interested, we're going to go from extreme views and get people clicking, you know, like clickbait and things like that. And it's like, no, fundamentally, this is a mental health podcast. And it's a mental health podcast for everybody. So regardless of what your views are, really what I want everyone to do is just kind of take care of themselves and try and figure out where their place is in the world and try and be decent to everybody. Do you know what I mean? I try not to get, I mean, I've got my own views, and I find myself, I could feel I was getting into it. I was like, no, it's not about that. Let's bring it back a bit, because I'll start ranting and raving about fucking things.
But also I think people have lost the ability a little bit to just disagree agreeably. Do you know what I mean? It's like I have rows. I try and avoid rows on Facebook and on Twitter, because it's just absolutely pointless, and it's just a waste of time. I don't really talk about politics much, if at all, in my acts, because it's divisive, and I want to unite people, really. So I keep it, you know, I chat about family and marriage and kids, etc., a lot more. But it's a very polarized. It feels very polarized at the moment, doesn't it? It feels there's a lot of anger. There's a lot of anger around. And I don't know how good that is for our mental health. I don't know how it sort of feels a bit pointless, a lot of it, because a lot of it is things outside our control, you know. Mm-hmm. But then, because I was thinking about this before the podcast, because I am a very sort of centrist. I'm just very right down the middle, and very, I like to understand different points of view and stuff, but people like me, if everyone was like me, nothing would ever change, you know. Everyone would just be like understanding each other.
Yeah, you're right.
But there's a lot of, you know, it's funny. I think, I mean, we'll talk about it maybe a little bit without getting admired too much, you know. I thought, in terms of, like, it's almost something you don't want to talk about, but I think there's been a rupture in the country post Brexit that we're still recovering from. I think something happened around that time that traumatized a lot of people and led to various things rolling on afterwards, and disputes and arguments. And it sort of had to happen in a certain, maybe. I wish it hadn't happened, but maybe it had to happen. But all I can describe it as is just a sort of, just a rupture. I think stand-up helps you deal with it more, because you get to go around the country and you see different cities and different towns and how they relate to it, etc. And you could see towns where people have voted for Brexit and they felt a bit judged because they voted for Brexit, or people who voted to remain. And it's just the tribalism of it, you know. But I think we're still recovering, basically, from that, you know. And I don't know how... I only mention that because I don't know how good it was for the nation's mental health. it did feel like a bit of a, you know, I know people, close friends who just became obsessed with it and were like trolling Farage and banned off Twitter and just lost their minds, you know.
Yeah.
And it had to be about more than Brexit. It felt like it was bigger than itself. I don't understand it, basically. I don't understand it. I'm just observing that we're still... It feels like everyone, you know, in everything, like COVID, masks, not masks, vaccines, not masks. It just, everything feels like
everyone got separated down the middle. Yeah,
a little bit. Yeah, this war, you know, this war. You know, I know guys who are on GB News, like some comedians on GB News, and GB News has got a lot of different types of voices. It's got left wing and right wing voices, but I know some guys on it, and they see themselves as fighting a culture war. We are fighting. We're fighting a war now. And there's people on the other side who think they're fighting a war as well. And it's a bit weird, isn't it?
It's a bit weird.
You know what I mean? It's a bit intense, isn't it? You know,
and all the while, all of this is going on, there's a, you know, the planet is getting to a point where we won't even be around for much longer. You're kind of going, while you lot are fighting, you need to just take a look at what's happening.
Yeah. Of course. Well, there's so much within and without our control, but it's just like the idea of that we've constantly got to define positions as if we're fighting a war. It's pretty exhausting, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? It's sort of because they asked me to go on it. And to be honest, I'd happily go on it. I'm fine. I'm fine with going on it, but I find it stressful going on telly. And I don't want to be part of that war. I don't want to fight war. I want to make people laugh. I want to write books. I want to stay healthy. And because these guys, they're on Twitter constantly. They're engaged in this battle for ideas. You know, most of the country don't really care about that. That's why it's interesting when you know things like this happen with Queen Elizabeth and a lot of people are queuing and everyone's saying how mad they are and stuff. It's interesting and people are surprised by their own country. It's just interesting when that happens beyond the bubble, isn't it? There is a world beyond the social media bubble that most of the people are engaged in.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? And that's stand-up's good because it keeps you with one foot in that, you know.
Yeah.
And you're constantly reminded that most people just do not care about these things, you know.
Yeah, I know.
And progress will happen irregardless. It just happens. I think it just happens.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it is a lot of wasted energy. It's always the same names. Always the same names. Having a go at this and the other. And so that's another reason why I get to a point where I'm like, a lot of people say to me, "Oh, you're not plugging enough. You're not plugging your stuff enough." I'm like, because every time I go on there, I see the same people shouting at the same people, and everyone's looking. Everyone wants to be the one that found the thing to be outraged about. They went, "Look what I found in this old film from 50 years ago." You go, "Yeah, that's what they thought back then, but now they don't."
I mean, that's one thing that I think most people can agree on, that that offence archaeology is not productive. The idea of going back into people's lives, and I think my kids' generation are going to reject that. I mean, I've chatted to them about it, and they see it's inherently unfair, isn't it, to judge someone by what they thought when they were 16, 17 or whatever, when they're in their mid-20s. It's just unfair, you know. Yeah. You have to let people grow up and make mistakes, but there is this kind of, this there's a viciousness to it, you know. Yeah. But you have to be in social media because you're promoting mental health. I mean, and that's a good thing. That's a good thing. You have to be, you've got to be the light in the darkness, mate. You've got to be the soul. You have to.
But it's that, like we said earlier, when we lift your laptop, you open your laptop and just all the fists, it's like a cartoon fight just spinning around. You're like, "Oh, for fuck's sake, no."
Yeah.
But we're similar age. So how have you found it now that we're all opening up and talking about our mental health? Because I know in your stand-up, I remember there was still one of my favourite bits of yours is you dancing around as a kid. And your parents saying, like, "Get your pyjamas on, you're going to bed." That one. And then suddenly you woke up, "Oh, I appear to be in my pyjamas."
That was I haven't done that for years and years, but that was pyjama time, the bit I used to do about pyjama, which I have fond. It was just a nice bit. I mean, obviously, you know what preempted it, but actually being in your pyjamas post-bath.
With a
clean bed to get, with fresh sheets to get into on a Sunday night. There's something about Sunday nights.
Yeah.
That was very enjoyable. That routine sort of points towards it. But I mean, I had a lot of violence when I was a kid, basically. There was a lot of violence around the house. And that's something that affected me. But, you realise how much it's affected you the older you get. At the time, you're just living your life, aren't you? So all the kids are very into survival. You get into survival mode. But I had that for years. And it made me aware that I didn't want to repeat it.
Yeah.
So before I had kids, I had therapy. And
Because
you don't want to pass it on. That's our responsibility, isn't it? It's like...
Yeah.
That's sort of what I was hinting at generationally, but you can experience these things, but it's our responsibility not to pass on the same thing. We'll make different mistakes. Call these drugs. We used to do. You know what I mean? We'll make different mistakes, but at least we're not fucking batting them around or whatever it was. You know what I mean? And I think, which is good. There's progress gets made generationally.
Yeah.
Um, So yeah, in terms of mental health, it sort of it affected me long term in that I'm very aware of the possibility of violence. Do you know what I mean? I'm very attuned to like people who might kick off certain situations. I'm very good at just melting into the background. I'm very, there's positive and negative things about it. But it's you just have to deal with stuff that happens when you're a kid, isn't it? You've got to accept what happened, try and deal with it and try and move on and not perceive yourself as a victim of it. There's loads of great things about my childhood, but it was just, there was a constant, my home was not safe.
Oh, really?
My family was not safe. So I think that's why I almost like fetishize my family now.
Mm.
The houses are safe. It's safe. You know, yeah. We've got a kind of house where kids come who've got problems with their own family and they live here for it. But we're that house. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
we're the house.
Nice.
And I really like it. I feel really. That's almost, I think, my, you know, in terms of like achievements or whatever, it just feels like that's been massive for me. That journey from chaos as a kid, loads of violence, dealing with that, going through it through therapy and various things, and then creating a safe, functioning house with like three kids and a marriage that's working. This isn't easy stuff, do you know? It takes a while. And it wasn't overnight, do you know what I mean? But, you know, there's been stages in my marriage where it's been chaotic in different ways, but I've stayed with it and I'm glad I did. And I'm at a nice place now. As you get older, you tend to chill out a little bit, but sorry, that was a bit of a rambling.
No, not at all.
It's a bit of a rambling response to a perfectly innocent inquiry about pajama time.
it was the setup to the joke.
Yeah, because the sense of the joke involved, and that's how you sort of deal with it a little bit in your stand up a little bit, don't you? Some people deal with it more head on, but with me, it was just a little thing, and also, you know, times change as well. So generationally, it was more acceptable when you were a kid in the 70s, when you had kids in the 70s, and things change now. Things have changed, and it's better. You don't want to see kids getting hit like that. It's not good.
No.
So yeah, but there's triggers everywhere, even at this age. If I have to wait for someone, I get a bit triggered by it. And it's just being aware of it, because I was used to waiting and someone's going to come in and it's not going to be a good scenario. So you've just got to be onto yourself, haven't you? And just take a breath and just like say, what was needed then is no longer needed now. You've got to learn new tactics for life and accept that my world now isn't as dangerous as it used to be, but it goes deep. These triggers go deep. Do you know what I mean? Because they happen for a long time. But it happens almost on a cellular level. You know, you've got to. I was chatting to someone the other day, and they're having this therapy that it's bio neuron feedback therapy. Right. So it's looking at their brain. It actually just takes images of their brain. And they'd had a similar upbringing, and areas of their brain are just developed in different ways. You've got to unlearn. It happens neurally, you know, because when you're like 6, 8 years old or whatever, your brain's still developing, of course. And so, and they've got a lot out of that. They found that really useful, because talk therapy is useful to a certain extent, but it doesn't get rid of that. Doesn't change your body, doesn't change your brain. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So this is a bit more practical. It's like your brain changed because of this happened. And we've all got it to a lesser degree. Things happen to everyone. Everyone, I write about this a little bit in my book. It's just like no one escapes. Everyone has an experience or a series of experiences that recalibrates how they view the world, that says the world might not be safe or fair or whatever it is. Do you know what? After which you've got to rebuild yourself. Do you know what I mean? We all get broken down to a certain extent.
Yeah.
And rebuilding can be, some people never do it. Some people just remain a series of reactions and triggers and never, but if you want to really heal yourself, you've got to take your time, think about it, and the various therapies are available. But this brain feels like it it's quite expensive. So with the cost of living, it might be either like, you know, heat the house or sort my brain out. Do you know what I mean? But in the meantime, stand-up is a very healing thing for us, isn't it?
Oh, definitely.
It gives us an awful lot, do you know what I mean?
And through stand-up, I've got to meet some really interesting people like yourself, and then we talk about our experiences, and then you go, oh yeah, that was the same. Like, you're just talking now about what you experienced as a kid, and I'm like, yeah, it was pretty, it was a weird mixture of my parents. We never went without. We always had things. We were always fed, but there was that air of kind of, any minute, one of them might lose their temper about something, or something might happen. And so it got to the point, I never wanted to, I was always out, and I stayed out as long as I could, because it was more fun being out than going home and being told off, and you've done this, you've done that. And then that worrying that you've upset someone
there. That's exactly the opposite of what being at home should be, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, you should want to go home. Home should be a place of safety. It's like where you go, they have to take you in. It's just like that prodigal son thing. It's just like, you're safe now. And that's what I've always wanted to give. You know, my kids or anyone who comes in, do you know what I mean? But what you find, it's very easy to recreate chaos in another way around your house by getting really drunk all the time or whatever. Yeah. And just like, just to feel safe at home and radiate that. It's ongoing. That's all I can say.
Oh, yeah.
We're getting there, but it's ongoing, you know.
It's like my youngest. Go on.
No, go for it. You're saying you're quite young.
I was just saying my youngest is 25, and we've only now started to, like, when I see him, we have a few pints and we have a nice time. But for years, I remember when he turned 18, and I was like, I'll take you out for a pint. And he went, nah, you're all right. I don't really. And it wasn't until later on we got talking, and he said, it was just like, There was a night I'd come in, and I was drunk, and the lads were in bed, and I went in, and I was jumping on the bed, and I was mucking around, and then and I didn't realise that had put my son off drinking. I couldn't handle it, Dad. I was like, he said, I know you were mucking around. He said, but it terrified me. He said it put me off for ages. And you're like, again, so it goes back to what you're saying. It's like, now it's like when they. Yeah, I want them to know that if anything happens, they can come to me. And I'm like, it goes back again to what you said about not doing drugs with your kids, because there has to be a level of I need to be able to depend on you on a certain level.
You've got to make them feel safe.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest gift you can give them. It's like safety. But I can imagine when the kids are 18, you're quite a big bloke, aren't you? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Quite a force of nature, and I'm pissed.
Yeah, of course. And you're quite, it feels to me like, I don't know you particularly well, but it feels like you've gone through a transformation from a guy who was capable of looking after themselves, do you know what I mean, as well, and maybe willing to do it, into a bit more, your current manifestation, which is a bit more conscious and softer in a good way. Do you know what I mean? You're quite tough, I'd imagine. You can be quite a tough guy, and you've gone through a bit of a change. And that's great, isn't it? That's all we can do, isn't it? Try and just get better. But this is a roundabout way of saying, of like, you know, 10 years ago, if you were jumping up and down on my bed, I think it'd be
a scary. Yeah. It's like, oh, God. Oh, Dad.
Adam!
Boys!
But there's that thing of like, I remember watching a game of football when we were away on holiday at an all-inclusive in Sicily, and we were getting really drunk, and I support Man United, and we were playing Chelsea in a European Champions League final. And it was a penalty shootout, and it was really tense. And United won, and I was just like, lost my mind. And I sort of like had my son on the floor. I sort of picked him up, and I was like, hey, you're on the floor. And the look on his face was like, honestly, we don't need to get quite. Do you know when you take it too far? They don't want to, you know. I find it hard to watch football with my kids, you know. I mean, yeah. they see the side of me when we're watching football. It's just like, they'll look at me like, all right, do you know
what I mean? Yeah, I know. But it's different, like, as you go, like you say, as you go along, you're learning and you're always, I don't think there's any, I've said this before on here, there isn't a destination to any of this either. There's no kind of, I'm going to be,
you just process
forever until you're not here anymore.
Trying to just, I find it, as I get older, I'm getting a little bit better at that. I mean, I still occasionally get disproportionately angry at things that don't deserve my anger.
So
if somebody breaks something, smashes something, I'll just kick off for like 5 seconds. But it's just a shocking reaction. It's just unnecessary. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or in the car or whatever. And that's just like unconscious rage. That's unresolved stuff that I need to dig. brain stuff. but I'm getting better at just checking myself now before that stuff happens. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just take a beat. You don't have to scare everyone because someone's dropped a plate or it's just, do you know what I mean? It's weird. These little triggers, because essentially I'm pretty laid back and I look after people and I'm all good. And I'm, you know, quite, I consider myself a generous person, but those little, it just comes in through the crack.
Yeah.
So that's the next stage. Just don't hurt my brain. No, unimportant things aren't really important.
I would like to be able to take it out sometimes and run it under the tap.
Put it back in. Because bizarrely, I'm quite good when things really go wrong. Because I'm comfy with that. Because it reminds me of being a kid. So I'm quite comfy in actual chaos. When everything goes really wrong, it's like, I'm okay. I sort of recognise it.
Yeah.
But it's just when everything's right, and then it's just a little thing goes. Really odd. It's odd the way you're constantly learning about yourself, isn't it? As you go.
Mate, I kicked off once with my ex partner in the car driving somewhere, and we got these chicken selects from McDonald's as well as like the burgers and everything else. And we're just driving along, and I went, "Oh, can I?"
I already like this story.
And I went, "Can I have one of those chicken things?" And she went, "I've eaten them." I could still see Burger King in the rearview mirror. That's how far we'd got. I went, "What do you mean you've had them all?" She went, "No, I had them." And she went, "Well, you've got those those cheese popper things." And I lost my shit.
I want the cheese popper things.
She went, "But they're yours." And I went, "But we always share the chicken things." And I just lost it. And I had my burger and I threw it back in the bag. And I'm driving and I just went, "This isn't about chicken strippers.
Of course.
This is, like you've just said, it's something unresolved.
Of course, this has triggered it.
Yeah.
But that's what I think about bigger things like Brexit and stuff as well. I just think it's triggers for people. People project and people... I don't just get angry stuff they can't control, but it's just like, it's just sort of, you've got to listen to anger, haven't you? You've got to listen to it when it comes and what it's about. And it's not a bad thing as well. Sometimes there's righteous anger and you're right to feel it, but it's the irrational moments that, do you know what I mean? That need addressing, you know? Or like my son, there was a thing with, when I was talking about boundaries earlier, there was an incident a couple of years ago and, my son had problems with some of his mates, and he got quite serious, and there was a bit of sort of physical argy-bargy with it. And I just wanted to kill him. I mean, I was just lost in violent fantasy. There was no boundary to it at all. I was shaking the day. I had to get therapy straight away.
Oh wow!
And I was talking to my wife about it, and she's saying, "What's wrong? What's happened?" And she said, "Things happen with young kids, and that's it. You've just got to do it." I said, "Yeah, but I just want to, I'm shaking. I want to kill them." And she said, "That's about you. That's because no one protected you, you know."
Yeah.
And when you get called, you know, when people are close, you can see a really obvious thing.
Really
obvious, but I just couldn't see it, you know. And obviously, that's not helpful to your son, to your kids either. They just want a dad who's going to be all right. They don't want a dad saying, where do they live? Do you know what I'm saying? They don't need that. Do you know, there's ways we can hurt them without people stopping. Do you know what I mean? They don't need that. They just need you to be chilled out, you know.
I'm guilty of that as well. I think I went down and because my eldest has had some issues with his mate. And they'd been really, there was a nice little tight group, and then one of them had been, and it was shitty what he did. So I remember going down there and then being at school, and they were all standing outside. And he's like, "Hello, Mr. Wilson." And I went, "Listen, I've been hearing what you've been getting up to, and I'm not happy." And he went bright red. And he went, "Oh, I'm just really sorry, really sorry." And this sounds really bad, but I had a softball bat and a ball where I'd been playing with the lads. And I lifted the back of the cart. I went, just watch yourself. And then I put the lid back down. And he just shit himself. I wasn't even going to do anything. And I think back now, I think, what a prick. What a prick. Like, I think I'd just watched The Godfather, some bollocks like that. So that was in my head. So I'm like, watch yourself, dickhead. This kid's 14.
Yeah, well, I remember my son when he must have been about 5 or 6, and some lad was bullying him, and they were all playing football, and I just heard, got a whisper that this lad was bullying him, I just got this kid on his own and just started swearing at him. He's only six. This 6 months. Why is his man? Do you know what I mean? That's not good behaviour.
No.
I didn't show my softball bat. That was my next move. This isn't rational or good behaviour. Good behaviour. Do you know what I mean?
No, not at all. And it's, even now, telling you, I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it's just a bit embarrassing, isn't it? But it's good to talk about it. But yeah, it's and you get those sort of people who are a bit more. I don't know whether it's like an upbringing thing. My dad was quite hard. He's quite tough. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And he was a policeman, I've seen him like just walking into town, and he just like walking past this guy, and he just threw his shoulder at him and threw him over a wall. And I was like, "What's that about?" He said, "He's a paedophile," and he was just like, he was like that. Do you know what I mean? He was just
wow.
He's a hard man. He wasn't part of my problems when I was a kid. I want to state that, but he was just a hard, so when you brought up with that, it's a bit different, isn't it? You just brought up, a lot of my middle class mates have brought up with this kind of repressed rage. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I was brought up with this bit more on the table. Do you know what I mean? So, it's a bit discordant when you're doing it in the middle of Crouch End. Do you know what I mean? What are you doing? Do you know what I mean? You're there with your softball. Oh, my
God. Holding him up by his ankles.
Yeah.
Oh, mate. But this has been great. But you're in a better place now, Tonks. You're in a nice place.
I feel great. I feel really happy. The kids are really happy. I really, really enjoy my gigs. I've got a book to write. I realised the three pillars of happiness for me, really, as long as everyone's safe and happy in the family, is some new jokes to tell, a book to write, a story to tell, and a race to run as well. I like a race in the diary. Oh, so yeah. I've got all three of them. So if those three, it's easy to feel a bit formless, isn't it, as a stand-up. You've got all the days. You've got these days. What are you going to do with your days? And I found that quite tricky for quite a long time, that feeling of isolation. But I'm a lot better now. And I've got a dog as well. I wish I'd got a dog 10 years ago. Because they just really cheer you up. They get you out of the house.
Yeah.
They've got that present moment kind of Buddha nature. They're in the moment. They're having fun. And it's just that the living being I spend most time with is my dog, because my wife goes to work and all the kids are like, just me and the dog. Just me and Billie Jean all day. You know, we have a little dip in the afternoon. She gets up, she shakes herself, give her a bit of food. We take her out for a little walk. It's just nice. You know, it's been a big difference, you know.
That would be amazing to live like a dog. Just be in the moment constantly. No looking back, no regret. They're not going, "Oh, do you remember that time I chewed his slippers?"
Yeah, totally.
That was embarrassing. Totally.
And they're not lost in revenge fantasies and things that happened previously. You know, they're always happy to see you. When they're tired, they sleep. When they're hungry, they eat. They're in the moment, aren't they?
Yeah.
So I'm really enjoying that. And the gigs are good fun. How about you? Are you enjoying yourself? You enjoying
yourself? Yes. Now? I'm in a better place now than I've been. And I feel good. More at ease with everything. I think.
How was Edinburgh? It's amazing that you did Edinburgh.
Fucking awful! It was awful.
Tough, man. It seems. I haven't done Edinburgh for a long time. It seems like an incredibly tough thing to take up. Feels like something that's getting harder to do.
It is getting harder. Mm. And if you go up there, I didn't have any PR. Couldn't afford PR. So no one knows you there. You know, I tried to do it about flyers for a couple of days, and then that was wrong. So I got a load of flyers and was out doing all the spots and things like that. But yeah, it's a different vibe, man. And the industry's focused on, they know what they want. They're focusing on other people, and you can't.
I think I've
got to a point. I'm not being big-headed, but I'm not getting on these things because I'm shit. It's just that the industry has moved somewhere else now. So you kind of, so I'm at peace with things, which is nice. I'm kind of chilled out vibe, which is a nice feeling.
Good.
I mean, yeah, it's a nice place to be. Yeah, but this has been lovely, Tonks. It's been great talking to you.
Yes, but it hasn't been too serious. It's been serious at times, hasn't it?
No, we've been everywhere, mate. All the emotions. It's been lovely.
Good.
And where can we find you? Funnily enough, can we find you online? Do you want us to find you online?
I'm online. I'm on Twitter at Paul Tonkinson. I go on it a lot. I don't contribute a lot unless I'm drunk watching the football. but I am on it, and I'm gigging, and you know I'm just gigging, doing the circuit. I'm trying to write a film this year. I think we chatted about that one.
Yeah,
you gig with you. So I've been working on that every day. Really enjoying that. And I'm there, man. I'm on Twitter.
Nice one. I do. You know, it's funny. I've now. I rarely drink in the house, but if there's on the occasion I've been out and I come in, I make a conscious decision not to go on Twitter because I do say stuff. And I think you even commented once, you just went atrocious or something like that. And I was like, oh, fuck yeah, I need to take that down. I'd gone off on, I can't remember what I'd said. And then, but it was lucky enough, I've got people around me that give a shit that went, mate.
it's such, I can't remember that actually, but
no.
I think it was in the height of COVID, wasn't it, when we all went a bit mad.
Yeah.
I think that it's a very, very dangerous scenario to be drunk with a phone in your hand.
God, you know? Yeah.
It's really dangerous. It's really
you've got access to the entire universe and you're pissed.
I mean, look at... Danny Baker. I mean, bless him. When he did the thing with the you know, that had been a thing he'd been doing for years. The Royals as chimpanzees.
I remember that. Yeah,
that had been a comedy trope he'd been doing for years and years. And Danny Baker always used to do a little thing at six in the evening with a big glass of red wine and like, oh, that's cheers. It. And he obviously got drunk one night, wasn't thinking about the Meghan thing. Because I don't believe Danny Baker's racist.
No, not at all.
If he is, he's done a good job of concealing it for the last 30 years.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, he's always been around, Dan, and he would have, you'd have seen it.
Yeah. He's promoted black artists all over. It's like, he made the mistake, and he'd lost his job by 12 the next day.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He was like, you know, just don't get drunk, mate. And he wasn't thinking about it. He was watching the football. He turned over to what he was tweeting about football, and then he realised it's all kicking off. You know, it's just like, just be aware. This is dangerous. It's a dangerous thing. It's like a car.
Oh, mate. Well, this has been fun. Thanks, Tog. Good luck with the book and the film. And I'll speak to you soon. Too. Thanks, man.
Insane in the
membrane. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.